we have this image of ourselves as real and solid people. But in fact, all there is a body and a mind. When you investigate, when you search in the body and in the mind, in the collection of the two, there's no findable person that can be located. So the person exists simply by being imputed. There's the body and the mind and independence upon those. The person is imputed, is designated. But within the body and mind, there is no person to be found anywhere. So this feeling that we have of ourselves as some solid, real person is a totally false feeling. We've had it our entire lives. We believe it. But it's make-believe. Because we believe it, because we believe there's a real person there, then the happiness and the misery of that person become of paramount importance. And so we act, creating karma out of attachment and anger and so on, trying to find happiness and avoid suffering for this person that is make-believe. The more we see that that's what the situation is for us and for others, the more we can have compassion for ourselves and others. Because we see that we create so much suffering totally unnecessarily, based on believing that there's a real, solid, findable person there when there isn't. When we have compassion for ourselves, we want ourselves to be free of cyclic existence. When we have compassion for others, we want them to be free. And so we aspire to become fully enlightened Buddhas for the freedom of both ourselves and others. So generate that intention, that motivation right now. So this, what I was talking about in the motivation, this make-believe person, this is actually, it leads us right into the first of the 12 links, which is ignorance. Okay? So to just, if you think about it, you know, we really feel like we're a solid, self-existent person, don't we? You know, there's a real me here. Definitely, there's a real me. And this is who I am, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. You know, there's a real me here. And don't cross me because I have my boundaries. And I have this and that, and you know, we have it all laid out. And yet when we look and ask ourselves, well, who is this person? Yeah, Who am I? Who is this person? When we start to look and examine, we look and we find there's a body, okay, there's a consciousness. And is there anything else? Find anything else? Is there some kind of soul there that's different from the body and mind? Some kind of soul that you find that you can say this is who the person is? Huh? Can you find some soul that's separate from the body and mind? Our body and mind are here and the person's somewhere else, floating around the universe somewhere else? Yeah? You can't, can you? Yeah? So there's no person that's separate from the body and mind, but there's just a body and mind. Where's the person? Where's the person? Are you your body? Is this thing you? You slice it open. I went into an autopsy when I was in Thailand. It was great, very good for my Dharma practice. Slice the guy open. Is there you inside somewhere? Or maybe you're in your head, you know? They did that, the autopsy too. They kind of, you know, had this thing, cut off the top of the skull and popped it out and popped the brain out and no person in there. Just a brain. You know, they threw it in this. They had, you know how when you go to the grocery store, the scales that hang with the little basket? They plopped his brain in the scale, weighed it, wrote it down, took it, chopped it up. Yeah, it looked like regular kitchen knife. You know? No person there. Okay. Is there a person in your mind? Yeah? I mean, what is the mind? Just the ability to perceive all these different thoughts, all these different emotions, you know, our sense consciousnesses, all these different things. Are any of them a person? Are any of your moods a person? Are any of your feelings a person? Any of your thoughts a person? Yeah? Anything you, your eye consciousness? Yeah? Your memory? Your dream? Your mental consciousness? Any of these a person? No. They're not persons, are they? So where's this person that we're so attached to? Yeah? When we start to look, there's nothing there, is there? There's no person there that we can point to and say, this is me. No. There's a body, there's a mind, and independence upon them, there's the conception, person. So we give the name, person. Then we forget that we've given the name, and instead we think we see person coming from the side of that body or that mind. But person exists because altogether we created that name and, you know, put it, labeled it in dependence upon that body and mind. So that's the only way the person exists. Okay? So there's a merely labeled person. There's no real person there. But we think there's a real person there. There's a real me, isn't there? And when we love somebody, there's a real someone I love. And when we can't stand somebody, there's a real someone I can't stand. Yeah? We think everything's very real. You know, this is a real bell, and this is a real clock. This is a real flower, you know. We see everything as existing, you know, has having its own nature, existing there inside the base of the basis of the designation. Okay, so we confuse the object and the basis of the designation. Okay. Okay. There's petals and a stamen. That's the basis of designation. We label flower. But we get the two confused and we think there's a flower somewhere in there. Yeah. But there's no flower in there. Yeah. There's a flower that we created with our mind, you know, that exists by us imputing it independence upon the stamens and the petals. Yeah. There's a merely imputed flower, but there's no real flower. So, you know, once in a while we can get some little, you know, taste of this, some little flavor of it. It can be a little bit unnerving because we are so convinced that we are solid and permanent in here and everything around us exists in the same way. But the more we do the meditations on the middle scope and the lamrim about the disadvantages of cyclic existence, you know, the more we come to understand that seeing things as real and solid is actually the source of our problem. Okay? So when we see it as the source of our problem, then when we hear a little bit about emptiness and things start to shake a little bit, we see that as good because it's shaking the source of our problem. So, now we see everything as so solid and real like this. And this is really the source of so much problem, because if there's a real solid me and then we build all of our identities on top of this solid me, then we have to protect those identities. And we get upset when they're threatened. You know, we have to protect what we think is going to bring us happiness. We get upset when it's threatened. Okay? So we create these identities. I am a certain nationality. I am a certain race. I am a certain religion. I am a certain gender. I am a certain sexual orientation. I am a certain socioeconomic class. I am a certain educational class. I have certain sports. You know, we generate, you know, create all these images and then think that they're who we are. And then when people don't agree, we get mad. And this is what they write newspaper stories about. Yeah? Mm-hmm. You know? If you read the newspaper, this is exactly what they write the newspaper stories about. Is it people, you know, who are attached to their identity and other people, you know, who are attached to their identity, and everybody just thinks the other one's weird and attacks the other ones and they fight wars over it. Yeah? And it's all made up. You know? It's all this suffering comes about because of our mind, the wrong conception mind, that makes up all these things, thinking that we're real people and other people are real people and all these identities are real and everything like that. Yeah, so that's how we create a lot of misery. Yeah? The newspaper is a great lamrim book. Yeah? It's all about self-grasping. All about, you know, it's the major theme of the newspaper is self-grasping ignorance. And it's a textbook on karma. Okay? Because you just look at what people experience and then you think, what kind of actions did they do in the past to bring about what they're experiencing? You look at what they're doing now and you think, what kind of result are they going to get from what they're doing? Yeah? Newspaper is tremendous in terms of teaching us karma. It teaches us mostly what to avoid. You know, we don't often learn too much what to practice from the newspaper. But just learning what to avoid is pretty good, isn't it? Yeah? Yeah? So you just look at what's going on right now. I mean, any day in the newspaper, it's all kind of basically the same, isn't it? It's all kind of ignorance, anger, attachment, karma. Okay, so we're talking, the 12 links describe how we get reborn in cyclic existence. Yeah, so the newspaper is teaching us that, you know. Like I said, the first link is ignorance. Yeah, self-grasping ignorance. Yeah. I am a staunch British parliamentarian. You are a Muslim woman wearing a veil. You know, this is impossible. You know? Kind of, we have our identity, we make somebody else have another identity. We insult their identity, they insult our identity. We quarrel a lot over it. Yeah. And who created these identities? Just our mind. Okay? So it's the ignorance, the self-grasping ignorance, and then it leads to the creation of karma. Okay, karma means action, volitional action. So based on our ignorant thoughts and emotions, then we do various things. Okay, we insult people, call them names, we drop bombs on them. Yeah, we start scandals over them, or maybe we're the ones who are acting inappropriate and start the scandals all by ourselves, our own actions, you know. And all these actions leave imprints in the mind. Karma is the second link. Okay, ignorance creates the karma, which is the second link. The karma leaves imprints on the consciousness. Consciousness is the third link. Okay. Then, so we have all these karmic imprints just sitting there, hanging out on our mental consciousness. Yeah, all the various levels of mental consciousness. And when the karmic conditions, when these imprints meet with external conditions, then they ripen. And they ripen in terms of what we experience. So one of the chief ways they ripen is in terms of what they call the maturation result, what we are born as. Okay? So consciousness, you know, throws us into what they call name and form. It means a body and a mind. That's the fourth link. Yeah? So that's the body and mind, let's say in a human rebirth, like right after we've been conceived. Okay? From that initial body and mind, then we get sense organs, sense sources, which is the next link. Then our sense organs contact various objects. We have the next link of contact, that's the sixth link. And then when we contact different objects, we get feelings. This is, you know, the big thing. So feelings, the seventh link, it refers to painful feelings, pleasurable feelings, or indifferent feelings. Okay. Now, we are addicted to our feelings. And I mean, some of us are addicted to our emotions, but all of us are addicted to the feelings of pleasure. Okay, there's pleasure to be had, we want it. Okay, what was it? Somebody was telling us about an experiment they did with mice. Let's see if I can remember it correctly. Where they had electrodes in the mouse's brain that stimulated the pleasure center. And that mouse, It had to do something, of course, to get that stimulus. But the basic thing, the outcome of it was that mouse would not eat or drink just in order to be able to get that electrical shock in the pleasure center of its brain. Okay? So it would rather starve to death in order to get a little bit of pleasure, a hit of pleasure. Okay, that's pretty scary, isn't it? You know, I mean, we will do anything for pleasure. Yeah, and anything to avoid pain. Which is why ethical conduct is so important, because that's what prevents us from doing anything for pleasure or anything to prevent pain. But, you know, we're pleasure addicts, basically. Yeah? Because when there's a little bit of pleasure, how do we react? We grab on, don't we? I like this. I want this. I have to have more, 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 more. Yeah? Okay? So when it's a pleasant feeling, boy, you know, we don't fall asleep. We don't, you know? We're paying attention. We're not spaced out. We're not distracted. We are 100% clinging and grasping. Okay? When there is an uncomfortable feeling, how do we react? You know, we're equally addicted to displeasure, aren't we? Yeah? Addicted not in the sense of wanting it, but addicted in the sense of hooked into it. Yeah? Because we can't endure the smallest, tiniest bit of displeasure, can we? You know? Small, tiny thing. Get it away. Get it away. I don't want it. I don't like this bug in my house. You know? I don't care if it wants to live and doesn't want to die. I don't want it here. Womp. Okay. I don't like this color pillow on my bed. I want that color pillow on my bed. I don't like this food. I want that food. You know? How dare you talk and say that to me in that tone of voice? Okay. You know that? Okay. The slightest bit of like something that gives us an unpleasant feeling, oh, we are reactive. You know, we push it away, we strike it, we run away from it. Okay. We're totally reactive. We're not active, we are reactive. Yeah? When there's pleasure, we react, boom, we stick. When there's displeasure, we react, and we attack it or we run away from it. Okay? It's almost as if we don't have any choice. And this is how people are. When you watch, you know, why people seem to live their lives on automatic. You know, what is it that makes our life live on automatic? It's this incredible attachment to pleasure and aversion to discomfort. You know? So much so that it's almost as if we don't have a choice because we are so hooked into it. Okay? And this is what Dharma practice does, is it makes us aware of this mechanism so that we can kind of begin to create a little bit of a gap between the feeling and how we respond to it. Okay? That's what we need more of, you know? Not just there's the feeling and there we are, but there's the feeling, how do we respond? So we're not just responding on automatic. That's when choice comes in. Okay? That's when we really have choice in our lives, is when we slow down. And we're not reactive every time there's pleasure or pain. It seems almost impossible, doesn't it? You think about it? Yeah? We watch our lives. And then, what is also very interesting about the seventh link of feeling, okay, is when we have a pleasant feeling, we usually think that it was produced by a certain external object, a person or an object of some sort. Okay? And we feel like, or we think that there's that person, there's that object. Here's this flower, and this flower is radiating the beauty to me that gives me a pleasant feeling. Okay? So what do I do is I get attached to the flower. What I'm actually attached to is the feeling of pleasure. I want the feeling of pleasure. Okay. But not recognizing that it's the internal feeling of pleasure that I'm hooked on, I mistake it and I think it's the thing that I think caused the pleasure, which is the flower. So then I get stuck on the flower and I want this flower. Yeah. Nobody else can have it. And it's got to last forever. And when it fades, I cry. You know? And that's kind of like falling in love, isn't it? What happens? You know, you meet this wonderful person. Darling! You know? You're so beautiful. And you're in love with this wonderful person. And then he gets old. Like the flower, you know, the flower wilts. This wonderful person gets old. You're so disappointed. Then it dies. And then you're just heartbroken. You know, heartbroken. This person I love died. How can I live without him? You know? So, I mean, it's exactly the same thing that we do with the flower. You know? This flower is supposed to last forever and ever and ever and ever. Never change, never get old, never wilt, never die. Yeah. Are we living in hallucination? We are, aren't we? Yeah? We expect this flower to never get old? It's kind of silly, isn't it? But we sure expect the good-looking guy that we're attracted to never to get old. But he does. Yeah. So, you know, we confuse the happy feeling with the object that we think caused it. And we latch onto the object. And of course, that is a total setup for misery. Because any object or person we latch onto is changing moment by moment. Aren't they? I mean, this flower is aging moment by moment. It's on its way out. Yeah? From the moment this flower started having its little bud, it was in the process of dying. Isn't it? You know, from the moment the baby's born, it's in the process of aging and dying. So, you know, putting all of our marbles in, you know, in one thing that is impermanent, it's a setup for disappointment, isn't it? And yet we do it over and over and over again. Over and over and over again. Yeah. Each new object, each new relationship, each new job, each new something. This is it that's really going to make me happy. Okay? Because we're so addicted to that feeling of pleasure. And then confuse it with the object and think the object is going to bring it. And then in order to get this object, you know, if this flower is going to bring me happiness, well, then there's a lot of things, you know, I have to go buy the flower, so I have to go out and get a job. Yeah? So I have to get a job. To get the job, I have to wear certain kind of clothes, have to drive a certain kind of car, you know, hang out with certain kind of people, present myself in a certain kind of way, to make the money to get my flower. Okay? And to protect my flower. Yeah? And so our whole life gets taken up with everything that we have to do to get our flower and to protect our flower. Yeah? And then somebody comes in and they're cleaning the center and they say, "Flower looks kind of old, I'm going to throw it away." How can you? That's my flower. That's my, you know, you can't take my flower. That's my flower. Who gave you permission to take it? Who do you think you are anyway? You're cleaning the center, clean somewhere else. My flower. You know, you don't agree with me? Well, I'm going to talk bad about you behind your back. And I'm going to tell you off right to your face. And I'm going to get everybody on my side against you. And I happen to have some bombs, so I might drop them on you too. Because don't you try and take my flower away from me. And don't you tell me my flower is ugly. And don't you tell me that it was came from your garden. Yeah. Okay. So do you see what happens? Yeah. Just to get my flower. Just to get my flower. Yeah. And if you really come too close, I'm going to beat you up. Yeah. Might even kill you because you're threatening my flower. And my flower is what's bringing me joy in the world. What is your flower? Do you have a flower in your life? It all seems quite ridiculous when we talk about a flower, doesn't it? It's so ridiculous that we get so attached to and so upset about a flower. But what is your flower in your life that you are so attached to that you will do anything not to be separated from and to have? Yeah. And what do you do? You know, how many backflips do you do every single day to get some pleasure from your flower? And who do you clobber? Yeah. Who's threatening your flower and your possession of your flower? Hmm? Okay, so we get really, you know, hooked in there.